This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll get to the power ranking of the power rankings in just a second here. A lot of chatter on the text page over the Astros conversation we were just having. And a lot of people are, I mean, we're trying to eat what's on our plate by keeping Alex Bregman, but merely bringing up Kyle Tucker's name. And if you missed it, Chandler Rome had a piece that said the Astros are getting a lot of phone calls about the availability of Kyle Tucker, if he's available. A lot of people, people seem more resigned to Tucker leaving after next year than they do to Bregman leaving in the next couple of weeks.
Which is more about the fact that Tucker's going to command a 10-year contract.
Dude.
And it just feels like such a stretch for the Astros. So that's where if you've resigned yourself to the Astros never stretching, then it's a lot easier to accept it. And yet, if everything else was taken out of it, let's say we had the Mets finances or what have you, but we still had to make a decision. I think the vast majority of people would say keep Tucker for 10 years than Bregman for 6.
They would. They would. That's an interesting. I may poll the. I probably put that poll up before. It sounds like something we've done, and I'm not disagreeing with you. But this Juan Soto contract does affect the Astros. Like the price, you know, Kyle Tucker, like Soto, is a corner outfielder that does a ton of stuff well. Does he do it as well as Juan Soto? Some things maybe, but not, maybe not the whole package. But age-wise, a little bit older than Juan Soto, but like he's in the neighborhood, man.
He's in he's in the $400 million conversation.
Yes, yeah.
And the Astros have never spent more than $151 million.
Right. No,
that's a big leap.
Yes.
That's a potentially threefold leap. Yeah. And
it ain't happening. Yeah.
So I can't believe I just said I'm okay with the Major League Baseball salary.
Yeah, right. I know.
And to be clear, I'm not okay. I wish baseball had a hard cap. The one saving grace is that the Major League Baseball Players Association seems to put a lot of pressure on their players to honor the contract, at least.
Yep.
There aren't holdouts, you know, with 2 years remaining on the contract or what have you. So that's the level of stability where at least you feel like, okay, we don't have to worry about disgruntled players as much in baseball as we do in football and in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Guys tend to honor their contracts, at least.
It's great news for the Yordan Alvarez contract, because that would be a contract where if he's still this guy in 2026 or 2027, I could see if Yordan's got the right representation, I could see them twisting the screws a little bit, you know?
If there were a culture in baseball of wrangling your way out of deals or forcing trades and everything,
100%.
But it's still very much the exception when that happens in baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's do this. Let's power rank the power rankings. This, on the heels of a weekend where the Texans did not play. Their bye week this weekend. They and five other teams had a bye, so we'll see how much movement there was for the Houston Texans. We rank the power rankings. We have four that we use in no particular order yet. SI.com, TheAthletic.com, CBSSports.com, ESPN.com. We count them down, and number four on the list this week is CBSSports.com, Pete Prisco. He's got the Texans down one spot. So they just sat around at home, didn't do anything, and moved down a spot to 15th, barely in the top half. And this is what Pete Prisco has to say, Seth. We know Pete Prisco, always very short and to the point. They come off a much-needed bye week leading the division, but they haven't played like a playoff team much of this season. The next 4 weeks has to be about getting right for the playoffs, to which I say, not exactly the schedule. That's not exactly a get-right schedule they've got coming up over the next four weeks.
No. But it's not a get-right schedule, but it is, man, one that if you can pass this test, if they were to win two of these next three games, I think the enthusiasm meter would be off the charts in Houston, especially, like, obviously one of those games would either be against the Ravens or the Chiefs. Those are the big ones. That's where you feel. If you split, if you split those two games there, you can feel like, all right, they're in the big boy pool right now. They're swimming in the deep end.
Okay, would you sign up for this right now? Okay, these next three games. I'll include the Dolphins game. Dolphins, Chiefs, Ravens over an 11-day period. 2-1, but the two wins are classic, like, Texans last-second hanging-on wins, and the one loss is like the Minnesota game where they get destroyed.
Or if it's the second half of the Titans game or something like that.
No. Yeah. They get blown out. They lose 40-7, but they win the other two games by a field goal. Would you sign up for that right now?
Oh, if they win the other two games?
They win the other two, but it's by a field goal, but they get blown out. And the blowout is at the hands of either the Chiefs or the Ravens. Either one.
It would be the first team the Chiefs blew out all year long.
If it were the Chiefs,
that would make me nervous.
Yeah.
And yet the Ravens scare me more from a physical matchup standpoint. So if the... Yeah.
I'm just telling you, if that happens, I don't know how great I feel. Like, I don't... A blowout to the Chiefs or Ravens almost cancels out a close win against them.
Yeah, because they've shown the ability to play it down to the wire with the better teams in the league,
Packers,
right?
Yeah.
The Lions is such a weird one. I've got, Sean, I asked over the weekend, okay, what do the Texans need to do to get on the Lions level in terms of team building?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And I had a lot of people fairly point out that, hey, the Texans did play a very close game to the Lions. The problem is, A, in that game, the Texans actually picked off Jared Goff five times and still lost. Like, the fact that it was close wasn't because they played a good, complete game.
Yep.
It's because they managed to pick off Jared Goff five times and
yes.
the offense did nothing. Yep. It should have been a blowout for the... You pick a quarterback off five times, you should be blowing that team out. I don't care if it's a 2007 Patriots.
Yep.
So, there's that. The potential, and the other thing about the Lions is, like, if you just look at points scored versus points allowed, they're at a record level right now. They've got, like, their scoring margin is, like, over 100 points, like, well over 100 points at this point.
Yes.
Where the Texans are just treading water and hovering in the positive territory.
20. They're plus.
They're not the same team. They're just not the same team.
Plus 20. I would, my hypothetical, I would sign up for it. Two close wins and a blowout loss. To either the Chiefs or the Ravens, only because I think there's a chance they could go 0-3 in these games right now. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you're giving me a winning record in these next three games. I don't care what they look like, but Sean, they're going to get destroyed by either the Chiefs or the Ravens, and you're going to come in on Monday and have to talk about it. Cool, I'll take the two close wins and see
the
where we go.
The crazy thing is, you know, it recency matters, and right now in this power rankings, the Texans are 15th, the Colts are 16th.
Yeah.
Even though the Texans have two games ahead on the Colts at this point, or two more wins at this point. The Bucks are the team that moved up above the Texans during the Texans' bye week.
Okay. All right, well, let's see. And they had a nice win, the Bucks did, over the weekend. All right, let's see.
By the way, real quick, too.
Yeah.
Finally, the line has been rectified. Where for weeks we were looking at the Patriots were a favorite in Denver.
The Colts.
The Colts were a favorite in Denver, which didn't make any sense at all. I think they're 4-point underdogs.
Okay,
now.
That sounds way more right. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, number three. So number four, CBSSports.com. Number three, power ranking of the power rankings, SI.com. Also has the Texans at 15th, holding steady. From last week, here's what Connor Orr has to say about your Houston Texans. The Texans aren't exactly a team on the skids. They did survive against the Jacksonville Jaguars the week before the bye, but I have a hard time penciling in a win against Miami at home. This Dolphins team is remade, and Houston has posted a net positive EPA for the offense as a unit just twice since October 20th. Since week 8, that was the Colts game at home, the Texans are 24th in offensive EPA, 24th in EPA per dropback, and 27th in dropback success rate. I'll translate. The offense has been very, very, inspiring over the last 5 weeks. Bottom quartile. Upper quartile of the bottom quartile.
Yeah, they're. It's just been.
Not good.
It's been. They're in a coma. It's just you've gotten nothing out of them at times.
Yep.
That Lions game, you had to, with five interceptions, you couldn't do anything with any of it.
Nope.
It's moribund.
Nope.
It's rough.
Especially in the second half. All right, number two, power ranking of the power rankings, theathletic.com. Texans holding steady at number 13 off of a bye. In their category this week, Seth, is the breakout player for each team. They select Kamari Lassiter as the breakout player for the Texans.
There we go.
They say this. The second-round pick doesn't get as much attention as some of this year's other rookie cornerbacks, much to the chagrin of Seth Payne, who has a Defensive Rookie of the Year betting ticket on Kamari. I added that part, Kamari Lassiter. But he's looking like a player who is on his way to locking up pass catchers opposite Derek Stingley for a long time. Lassiter and Stingley are tied for second on the team with three interceptions and tied for sixth on the team with 41 tackles apiece. I read that and I'm like, dang, they're tied for second. Who's first? Another rookie, Kalen Bullock. I think you could have just as easily put Kalen Bullock as the breakout player for the Texans here as well. Kalen Bullock's had a nice season.
I think both of those guys, they've got the potential to pull off what Will Anderson did last year, which is you're playing some high-profile games.
Yeah, late run.
You could make a late run for Rookie of the Year, because if you make big plays in these games, especially versus the Chiefs and then versus the Ravens on Christmas Day, they might surge up the boards if Kamari Lassiter had several picks in this
game. Mahomes been throwing some picks this year too, man. I mean, Mahomes, he's got double-digit picks this year, man. So just saying.
That's all we need. I made that futures bet on Kamari Lassiter back during training camp when, for the most part, it's first-round picks that are in the discussion.
Yeah.
And I still feel good about the pick because I think Kamari Lassiter has outperformed his draft status people's concerns about his 40 time, all of that.
Yep.
Because it was a really good – I can't remember what the number I got it at.
40-1.
The risk-reward was appropriate for me.
Yeah, you got it at 40-1 is what you told me at the time. So that's, maybe he can work his way back
into
it.
Thank you for handling my finances for me better than I do myself.
We need to talk about your 401k after the show. Last one, number one, power ranking of the power rankings, I believe for the sixth consecutive week. Good for you, DJ BNMA and ESPN.com. You're bullish on the Texans. They hold steady at number 11 in their power rankings. Most shocking ranking is their category. I don't know if I'm shocked by this. Quarterback C.J. Stroud leads the league in dropbacks under pressure. I mean, I guess maybe shocking compared to the beginning of the year. If you had to guess, would you have guessed that it would be that the pass protection would have been this poor before the start of the season? I know you had your quibbles with the O-line.
I was concerned about it, but I didn't think it was going to be worse than last year.
Right.
I think that's the biggest difference was. And I think maybe one thing we saw was that Jarrett Patterson's ability to make the calls at the line and prevent a lot of these miscommunication issues that the O-line had in the first part of the season. That made a difference last year, too, when Jarrett Patterson was playing center. And as much as I think Juice Scruggs is more naturally a center than he is a guard, right now, for this team right now, Jarrett Patterson is the guy that has to play center. That's where it gets interesting with Kenyon Green versus Juice Scruggs. Yeah, I think it's fair to wonder, would Kenyon Green be better now with Jarrett Patterson at center? And, how do you figure that out? Mm-hmm. It might end up being a rotation at left guard for a little bit. And I'd be cool with that. Usually people are skeptical of rotations on the offensive line. Look, you're not in a lofty position of strength right now where you can't be playing a little experiment. Experiment!
Yeah.
We got to figure out a way to make this monster come to life, damn it.
Yep. Got a lot of people.
Hook up some calipers to the nodes on their necks and send a charge through them.
Let's go. Text message, Sean, regarding your hypothetical. I'll take 2-1 over the next three, no matter how they look. That's kind of where I'm at. If you missed it, my hypothetical was, would you sign up for 2-1 over these next three games if the two wins are classic close Texan, letting the other team hang around wins? And of course, one of them, you'd be like, yeah, I can't believe they let the Chiefs or the Ravens hang around. And the loss was a blowout loss. Now, I would take, you know what I would sign up for? They lose close games to the Dolphins and the Chiefs, and they blow out the Ravens on Christmas Day. That's the rare 1-2 that I would sign up for, because that would give you momentum going into that last game of the year,
Ravens will be coming off a game versus the Steelers, by the
way.
Right. You know, probably going to be a tough, physical, highly emotionally charged air to it. And then they're going to be traveling on Christmas and playing on Christmas Day. I think the Texans might have a bit of the less definable advantage in there.
I agree with that. I'd much rather be the home team playing on a short schedule on a holiday than the road team for sure. Seth, as you know, I was in Pittsburgh this weekend watching the Steelers and the Browns, and I can tell you from my educated eye, they are strong, tough, and physical, the Steelers. That's what I walked away from that game with.
Yeah.
I could see it there. I was in the stadium. You need eyes on the Steelers there. I was there, and my assessment, strong, tough, physical football.
That's your advanced scout.
It is.
Notes that you came back. If you were working for D'Amico, he would have been like, okay, Sean, what'd you learn? And you'd be like, you know, they seem pretty tough. They seem like a tough football team.
Strong.
That's what I noticed.
Physical.
Yeah.
And they play this song called Here We Go, like 15 minutes before the game.
And then you leave and D'Amico like starts rubbing his forehead. It's like, I can't believe Cal made me hire this guy.
I can't believe I did Cal this solid.
What the hell? Just wasting my time every time I talk to him.
He does bring donuts, though. Yeah, like D'Amico needs a donut. It was the last time D'Amico ate a donut. Speaking of donuts, okay, I'm going to save this. I want to ask the audience what they thought of something the NFL did last night. So we'll get into that. The college football playoff bracket is out now as well. I've got one thing I think they will change about this next season. We'll get into both of those items coming up next.
610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the 12-team college football playoff bracket is out. This is my first chance to sink my teeth into it on the air. I was on my first Yingling beer at the Steelers game when the bracket got dropped Sunday morning. Like, that's a weird time to do the reveal, but I guess I got to get all the other bowls slotted. Baylor LSU here for the bowl game. That's, as bowl games go, that's like with that don't have a playoff ramification. That's a pretty good one, you know, just locally here. You get a lot of good Baylor LSU.
Aside from just all the football factors, fan bases, brand appeal, all of that. That's a good. It doesn't feel like they're trying to shoehorn something into it.
Yeah, I think David Fletcher and everybody over at the Lone Star Sports and Entertainment real happy with that. My main takeaway, Seth, from the first ever 12-team college football playoff bracket, taking SMU over Alabama as the last team in, because the 12 seed is Clemson, who won the ACC. So they had an automatic bid. So the last of the wild card or the at-large teams was number 11 SMU. So ultimately, SMU losing the ACC title game hurt Alabama because the committee said, all right, well, we know SMU didn't win their conference, but we look at their resume and they deserve to stay in this dance. Alabama, you out. And so that's a severe blow to this was a big thing out there, and I'm not going to say that I wasn't thinking this too, but everybody out there, well, the committee's just going to kowtow to the SEC in this whole thing. And they didn't. I mean, they didn't even spurn Alabama at the expense of a Big Ten team. They did it at the expense of a team that's been in the ACC for 1 year, SMU, I thought that was good to see. I might piss off the SEC a little bit, but whatever.
Oh, no. Yeah. And I say that as an honorary Aggie. It's like, look, I'm self-aware enough to know that the SEC is going to just, you can't have just everybody kneel down at your feet all the time. That's a victory, too, for just if long-term what you're hoping is that everything kind of, the level field for competitive, the playing field for competitiveness maybe gets leveled out a little bit, and that it doesn't have to be blue blood programs or the huge conference or whatever to actually entice more recruits to come and everything. I think that's good.
I think Alabama would be favored on a neutral field against SMU, and that's not how they're deciding this. They're looking at resumes and whatnot. Any Alabama or SEC person complaining about Alabama not getting in, I would say don't lose to Oklahoma by 3 touchdowns 2 weeks before they're putting the final bracket out there.
Yeah.
You know, like, just I have a hard time crying for anybody that loses three games and doesn't get into it. You know what I mean?
It's well, and especially too, it's George Foster, who played in the NFL, and he played for University of Georgia, yeah. Who obviously was happy with the selection committee. Yeah. But also pointed out that, man, like, how have we changed this quickly that it used to be to have a chance at a national championship, you had to win all your games. To now, teams with three losses are whining about not making the yeah. playoffs. Like, get over it. Don't lose three times in a football season.
Totally,
okay?
Yeah. Yeah, you can lose two and be Alabama and get in. So, yeah, I think the one thing that they're going to tweak, I heard Dan Orlovsky talking about this yesterday, and I totally agree with him, is that the four highest-rated conference champions getting the four byes. I think I'm fine with five conference champions getting into the 12 automatically. That Boise, though, like Boise and Arizona State are fringe top 10 teams at best, and that they're the 3 and 4 seeds in this and get a bye. Like and this is where the Notre Dame part comes in for me, because Notre Dame can't get a bye because they're not in a conference. So the best they can be is the 5 seed. So I was looking at this before the bracket came out. I'm like, damn, Notre Dame gets the 5 seed. They're going to get the 12, and then they're going to catch the not Big Ten or not SEC conference champions in the next round. Yeah. Like, if you're the 5 seed, your path to get to the Final Four is 12-seeded Clemson and then Arizona State. No disrespect to either of those programs. If you're the 6 seed, your path is SMU and Boise. Two teams that weren't even Power 4 teams a year ago. You know, now one of them is. Yeah. You're the 7 seed. You're Notre Dame. Your path is Indiana at home and then Georgia in the next round, you know?
Okay, so I'm torn on this one, too, because in any given year, you're going to have issues like this. And yet, for the long-term good of the sport and trying to, like, give each of these conferences reasons to entice people or reasons to watch.
Yeah.
It does it's probably good for the health long term.
Maybe.
As frustrating as it might be in the short
term. Yes, it made all those Saturday games, and in the case of Boise Friday game, super meaningful.
Right, yeah, and it keeps the conference championship game at least of some relevance.
Yeah.
I don't want to turn to the NBA where all teams most fans aren't even aware of what division they're in.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't matter.
Hey, I have a recommendation for the committee. I would stop allowing people in the selection room on selection Saturday and Sunday to film video of them watching the games. Did you see that video, Seth?
I saw that. It was, one that I saw point out that none of them are taking notes.
No.
Like, you don't even have your phone out in front of you.
No, they're all just sitting in recliners watching games silently.
Yeah, I don't.
Just optics, you know what I mean?
I don't trust people who don't take notes when they're trying to digest just reams and reams and reams of information.
When they're deciding a multi-billion-dollar television enterprise. I mean, that's what this
is. Yeah, can you at the very least put on a show of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just pretend that you're taking notes. I don't know. Yeah, just something.
Do the Matt Patricia thing. If you put a pen or a pencil behind your ear, it always looks like you're working harder than you actually are.
Right.
At least stick a pencil, a few of you, not all of you, because then it looks suspicious, but if at least two or three of you had pencils behind your ears.
I got excited yesterday because I realized I think I might need reading glasses, and I feel like that could be good for me. I feel like people might think I'm smarter if they see me in glasses.
I don't think... Have you ever worn glasses in your entire life?
Never. No, I don't hate them. I don't like them. I don't like wearing sunglasses, yeah, but I think I might need some reading glasses.
And you're excited about this.
Yeah, because of the give me kind of like a academic intellectual vibe. Yeah.
Okay. So
if the commies take over, I'm getting rid of the glasses.
Sure.
Because those are the first people they round up and shoot. They shoot the intellectuals.
Right.
I'm gonna grub it up after that. I'm gonna
You were earlier in the show saying you wanted to do sort of a cowboy look, right?
Yeah.
Can you pull
cowboy
off both?
With glasses?
Can you pull off? Can you combine those, or are those separate? Do you think?
No. Yeah, I think that works.
Intellectual
cowboy. That's enough of a clash that looks like They almost look like Then it's almost like the Hanson brothers in Slapshot.
Yeah, a little bit.
The glasses almost, because it doesn't fit with the rest of the character persona. It almost makes them that much scarier. Yeah.
Intellectual cowboy. Nobody's done that yet, I don't think.
I ain't afraid to go out and bust some Bronx, but with my glasses on.
Right.
That's how good I am at it.
Right. Yeah. While reading Chaucer. while sitting sitting on the bucking Bronco. Yeah,
Chaucer's an interesting choice. Yes, yes.
I'm just using something that I was forced to read back in English class. Let's see here.
Chaucer is like, hey, this is basically smut, but written in Old English.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I got to be careful what authors I throw out there.
This is basically, it could have been written on a restroom wall somewhere.
Oh,
but it's,
okay.
Yeah.
Is that gonna, okay, Chaucer won't get me canceled, though, by using him.
No.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Text message. Cardinals are looking to trade Nolan Arenado, 8-time All-Star, 3 years left on his deal. Is he too much of an older guy for the Astros? Do we want to have an older guy at first and third base? I don't know if I'm on for that. Here's the thing. If Bregman leaves, you can't get choosy about who plays third base for this team. Like, it's, if Bregman leaves, you are out over your skis at third base. And if he leaves, there's just as good a chance that they invest at some other position and just muck it at third base the way they mucked it at first base last year or in center field the last couple years.
I think the most evidence I got that we've been extremely spoiled at third base by Alex Bregman was, I can't remember, somebody when Alex Bregman had his gremlins in his elbow last year said, well, hey, you know, Bregman's defense or lack of defense won't be the reason the Astros don't win a World Series. And I thought, like, I wouldn't be so sure about that. Like, it's one or two key defensive plays can be the difference in whether you win a series or not. And his defense is so good. And you can, and it was the best it's ever been in a lot of regards when he was healthy last year. We're going to miss that defense at third base.
100, dude, I feel like that game that Shea Whitcomb had playing third base. Remember, he had like 3 errors in one inning.
Yeah,
he had like four errors in 2 innings. I felt like that was the baseball gods telling Jim Crane, "You better sign this guy. this is how the other half lives over here with
Shea
errors at third
gift
base."
To Houston.
Yes, giving us. I think it was Whitcomb. I always get him and DiCenzo mixed up. I think it was Whitcomb. The text page will tell me for sure. For what it's worth, the Astros are fourth on the odds board for Nolan Arenado. So there's. You know, they're like 10th or 12th for every other guy out there at various positions or
where
pitching.
Are the Astros on the odds board for Alex Bregman himself?
Well, the odds they put out there are if they don't re-sign with their current team.
Oh, okay.
So they don't even put the Astros there. Like for any guy that's leaving, they just do it. If they're not retained by their current team.
It doesn't seem fair.
No. If there were an opportunity, well, I mean, I guess there is an opportunity to not bet on the Astros, but I have to pick a team. If you had to bet, who would you bet right now? Red Sox, Yankees, if you had to bet, or Astros, like if you've just...
For Bregman?
For Bregman, yeah.
Yankees?
I'm going to say...
Oh, that would suck. That's the one that would suck.
Would we get Turturro angry about Bregman signing with the Yankees? Probably not. Turturro.
No, he'd be excited about it. He'd say this is what good organizations do, and yeah.
No. Oh, I meant would we get that level? Yeah.
I don't think so, because I don't think. Well, plus remember Bregman's first start was in New York, was it not, with the Yankees? And his mom was a Yankees fan growing up. There'd be a little bit of a Garrett Cole vibe to that.
Oh man. I don't like hearing that Garrett Cole vibe on anything. For Pete's sake. Didn't Notre Dame lose to a D3 school in Illinois? No, they weren't D3. They were a MAC school, Northern Illinois.
Oh, you know what? No, and to go back to Bregman, sorry.
That's okay.
I forgot this. The Tigers are the favorite right now.
Yes.
And that makes a lot of sense because I think that A.J. Hinch is probably the best suited of all MLB managers in being able to explain to the stat nerds in the organization, the analytics folks, about the extra, like, undefinable element that Alex Bregman can bring. And most analysts in baseball or analytical people, they're open to, there's certain things you can and cannot measure. I think that Hinch is the best suited to really explain that part to the analytics folks. And A.J. Hinch himself is totally going to appreciate everything that Alex Bregman brings. So I would say the Tigers most likely.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Tigers. I think the Tigers would be perfect for Bregman because it's not – they're ascending. He's that vet that kind of helps them ascend. If he gets off to a slow start with the Tigers, it ain't New York or Boston when it comes to – callers to radio or media or whatnot. It's a softer media market. He's got Hinch there. I think Detroit's got money to spend too right now.
Okay, so I did find odds for Bregman that include the Astros.
Oh,
right
okay.
Now, the Astros are the favorite at +380. So would you put $10 of your hard-earned money down to win $48 if Bregman comes back to the Astros?
Sure. Plus 380 sound like that seems like decent value.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah.
You need the market to dry up a little bit. I don't think the Astros are moving off of 6 years, you know, and I don't think they're going to get in the neighborhood of $200 million. So you need, but plus 380 is decent value. If you told me it was like closer to even money, I would have said, hell no. I mean, I think he's leaving, but that's a 4-to-1 shot that he's sticking around.
The thing that I always just, you got to remind yourself of this, that it feels like, okay, what? 6 years at 156 versus 7 years at 175. What's 20 or 30 million dollars? What's it really matter? It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, man.
It's a lot of guaranteed money.
Yes.
And Bregman's at an age where that last year of the contract is certainly not. He's not probably going to make that money realistically if he were a free agent that year. It's a lot of money, no matter how rich you are. It's an extra 20 or 30 million is a lot.
No doubt. All right, the Texans are getting some reinforcements this week. How significant are these returns? We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans, on that in a minute.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Texans getting a couple guys back off of IR. That would be Christian Harris, linebacker. Kenyon Green, former starting left guard. Is he going to be the starting left guard again? D'Amico Ryans asked about lineup decisions yesterday at his press conference. Here's what he had to say.
Of course, we have guys that are coming back, guys who are out. There'll be differences in our lineup changes, and we'll kind of see how that goes throughout the week. So we'll continue to assess, you know, getting Christian back, getting Kenyon back is helpful. We'll see how those guys continue to progress throughout the week and see where they are and if they can help us, you know, this week or not.
All right, so you guessed earlier, Seth, that Christian Harris would probably be part-time in this game coming back.
I think so, especially because they have 3 games in 11 days.
Yeah.
That's the big part of it. It's this is just too tough a stretch to expect him to go out and play 210 snaps or so over the course of 11 days. So they might try to ease him into it. And then maybe, depending on how the game goes, kind of like what they did with Nico, right? When he first came back, he was kind of a part-time participant, and then they leaned on him as the, you know, depending on whether they needed him in the third and fourth
Will too.
Quarter.
Will Anderson also.
Yeah. So I think that's probably how it's going to be. There'll be some kind of a rotation at linebacker.
Yeah. What are the chances Kenyon Green is the starting left guard for this team again?
I think there's a 50% chance that there's a rotation at left guard.
Ooh,
I don't know who starts. I don't know who starts or who doesn't start, but I think that this might be a little bit of a December tryout for the playoffs. I'm open to the possibility that with Jarrett Patterson at center, with the, you know, mentally and in terms of communication, the offensive line has operated better with Jarrett Patterson at center. We haven't seen as many just boneheaded miscommunications. I won't even call them mistakes because you can never know exactly who's to blame. It's been a cleaner operation. Hasn't been a great operation, but it's been a cleaner operation, especially the last game versus the Jaguars. So, at this point, I don't think you can say with certainty that Kenyon Green's a better or worse guard than Juice Scruggs. So just go ahead and figure it out on the football field.
Yeah. The only thing that scares me, like Kenyon Green, every time he's been coming back before, like this time he's coming back from an injury. He never played with this injury, though. You know what I mean? Like he was, when Kenyon was playing poorly his rookie year, he was banged up the whole season. Then he never got on the field his second year just because he was still banged up. He just went and got, you know, they put Humpty Dumpty back together again during that whole season. And he was, by all accounts, fully healthy this year. And struggling, you know?
And it's a separated shoulder. So, again, you know how I feel about separated shoulders. If it's just a separated shoulder, it's a matter of, a lot of it's just a matter of pain tolerance.
Yeah.
You know, now it can be more than that. One of our listeners yesterday, because I kind of went off on Trevor Lawrence and how he allowed a separated shoulder and his non-throwing arm to affect him as much as he did. One of our listeners pointed out that Baker Mayfield was probably in that same boat up in Cleveland. You found out afterwards that Baker Mayfield, it wasn't just a separated shoulder. It was multiple dislocations. It was broken bone. It was a really bad scenario. So maybe that's how it is with, maybe that's how it is also with Trevor Lawrence. Yeah. I don't know. For Kenyon Green to be coming back and playing, I'm guessing it's just a simple separated shoulder.
I would think so. Playing that position for sure.
Very, very, very painful, but possible to play through.
If the Texans win, there's a text message. If the Texans win Sunday and the Colts lose, do the Texans clinch the division? Yes. Magic number is 2 right now. That's the combined number of Colts losses and Texans wins that clinch the division. So, yeah, if the Texans are able to, as a 2-point favorite, beat the Dolphins at home. And if the Broncos, as a 4-point favorite?
Yeah, and the line opened at...
Can beat the... They're hosting the Colts. Yeah.
Yeah, the Colts were favored by 2.5 opening, and then immediately it was driven down to plus 4.
That's so weird to me.
So does Vegas... So the handicappers set it where they did and probably adjusted for, you know, a public perception and everything. The public... Or the sharp, somebody came in and just drove that 6 points in the other direction.
Yeah,
is that who? Does Vegas know more than the rest of us?
I don't know. Where did you see? I mean, you saw on the same website I did that they were a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks, that's the only place I saw it, which leads me to believe it had to be like some typo of some sort.
No, Vegas, the
Jimmy Shapiro email?
Vegas Insider had the opening line at Colts minus 2.5.
Okay.
And now they're all sitting at plus 4, so I don't know what happened.
Everybody, when I tweeted out that line a couple of weeks ago, with the caveat that I don't think this is right, but here's what it says, everybody was echoing that, saying, man, I would pound the Broncos right now. If that's the actual line, like this looks more accurate. I'm looking, it's 3.5 now, Broncos at Denver. I mean, the Broncos are 8-5 and they're playing good football right now. And I know there's a feeling that they're piecing together because it's a rookie quarterback, but Bo Nix has not been bad. Bo Nix has been okay.
So Vegas Insider has it, the opening line as minus 2.5.
That's wild.
And then everywhere else, it's anywhere from 3.5 to 4.5, plus 3.5 to 4.5. So I don't, man, after the Jets game, I swore because the Jets were favored in that game. And I felt like even trying to look at it objectively, I thought, I don't see the reasoning for this. And lo and behold, there was a lot more to it. I don't want to second guess people that are running computer models on this thing. That's what we'll have to look at is the computer models.
I'm taking Denver in this game against the Colts. Like 3.5, whatever it is. Like, dude, Anthony Richardson against that defense on the road. And Denver's a hard... Like, Denver, that is a tough place to play when the Broncos are good.
Well, this is the problem. It's that Anthony Richardson cannot be evaluated like any other NFL quarterback. Yeah. I mean, to an extreme degree. We've seen this before where guys who are threats with their legs... Going back to Tim Tebow, that you just, like, everything kind of breaks down because you've got such an atypical player at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Richardson, while completing fewer than 50% of his passes in various games, has been a driving force behind some of these victories. So I think that's just the huge wild card, is that on any given Sunday, Anthony Richardson can be a huge headache for you.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it doesn't look like a conventional NFL quarterbacking.
I have a text message here from, this is when we were talking about the video of the selection committee. If you missed it, there was it might have been Heather Dinich, who covers college football for ESPN. They let a few of the media types in the selection room just to, you know, kind of watch the process take place. One of them took a video, like panned the room of the 13 selection committee members. They're all sitting in recliners. Half of them look like they're about to fall asleep. Text message, there wasn't a single beer in that room. No way they know what the common fan wants to see.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
No beer.
What does this pass to the buzzed test?
No wings, no beer, no nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to put these teams up in a keg stand and see how much beer they can suck down over the course of 20 seconds. Okay, so I'm looking at one computer simulation, Sean.
Okay. Yeah.
From 19 hours ago.
Okay.
Colts have a win probability of 59% over the Broncos.
I know you're looking that up and you're looking, it's on your computer screen, and this is not a commentary about you. That is wrong. That is incorrect. That the Colts, what about the Colts tells you that they've got a 60% chance nearly of winning a game in Denver against the Broncos? The Colts aren't even a playoff team right now. Like, it's wild to me. Like,
I think Anthony Richardson screws everything up.
He does?
I think whether you're a gambler or a computer model.
These performances you're
talking
about.
Are you Gemini? I don't know.
They don't happen 59% of the time. Like, by definition, like, they happen like 10% of the time. But when they happen, whoa, man. That's just wild to me. Okay.
I think defensively, they're an okay bunch.
The Broncos?
I guess. Yeah.
The Colts.
Yeah, they're not as bad as they looked in week one versus the Texans.
I got to research this. What the hell is going on out there with this Colts-Broncos game? I got to check this
out. By EPA, the Colts are the 25th best offense
in the league right now. Like, I don't know it's weird computers, man.
I'm trying to lean on, like, what the computer itself might be looking at.
Yeah.
And there's just the... I don't get it. I don't get it. I'll make a case for the Colts winning this game tomorrow. I'll go in there. I'll play devil's advocate for this.
Sounds good. Your intellectual cowboy look you're looking to do with glasses and cowboy gear. It's called a hipster in Austin. Someone said.
Ew, I don't want to be a hipster from
intellectual
Austin.
Intellectual cowboy.
I'll only wear the Western shirts when I'm not wearing my reading.
That's
glasses.
What I'm saying. I think you got to separate the two. I don't think you can pull them both off at the same time, man. No offense. If anybody could, you could, but I don't think anybody can. They hit the glasses and cowboy. Hey, John Lopez.
So if it's not a unique, I was going to say, yeah, but if it's a unique look, I can pull it off. But it sounds like it's not a unique look.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to do that.
Yeah. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula are here. Do you wear glasses?
I used to. I had LASIK.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Reading glasses. I used to
reading
wear.
Glasses. Yeah. Okay. And you don't even need the readers anymore.
Heck no, baby.
Oh, you're like the coolest older guy around. Like, no readers.
My wife
no
calls me Eagle Eye.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. She goes, I can't see
I'm
this.
I'm calling shenanigans.
Calls you Eagle Eye, huh?
Yeah,
all right. That's a nice.
I have a little trouble driving at night, but
that's what every woman wants, a guy with good vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Eagle Eye.
Ew, you going to wear that?
Yeah. You don't wear glasses, do you?
I don't. I've been very fortunate.
You truly are an Eagle Eye.
Yes, I've been blessed with 20/20 vision.
Manufactured.
See, Reginald,
eagle
though,
eye.
You might want to think about being the kind of guy that wears the fake reading glasses. I think you'd look good in glasses. Yeah.
I bought some of those recently, just blue light blockers for Halloween when I was Questlove to really sell it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a dangerous road. I could keep.
Yeah,
now
you're like, you're looking at it, you're like, not bad.
And try to pretend to be
Figgy
a,
has
a
several
bigger
pair.
Intellectual.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Does Figgy have vision impairment, or does he wear them for stylistic
style.
Sake?
Okay. Does he? I thought. Okay. Yeah. My bad. Because you can never tell who just like wears contacts all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't like those big Urkel glasses that CJ wears sometimes in the press conferences.
I don't either. They look like librarian glasses.
Yeah, and I'm sure that I know that's the style these days or whatever, I'm guessing, but like I don't like it. I don't like it.
Does his face become punchable when he's got the glasses on?
Has that been a running theme today?
Well, we talked about punchable. Well, we were doing Acknowledge Me earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I heard that, which by the way, nice look.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I got my Acknowledge Me ugly Christmas sweater on. But I acknowledge Sam Darnold.
Yes.
Because he's been really good this year, and he was great on Sunday. And I've been one of his most vocal critics in the Houston area, at least. And Seth asked me, is his face still as punchable as it's been? And I said, no, not really, because one, he's good at football now. And two, and don't get me wrong, it's still punchable, but not as punchable, because he got the beard now, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you play the way he's playing and you rock that beard, I can't quite get in, but we had a bunch of people texting in who the punchable quarterbacks are right now, and obviously Will Levis and Trevor Lawrence and names like that show up.
Zach Wilson come through there?
Zach Wilson did not, but it's only probably because he's the emergency quarterback in Denver.
Fair enough.
A little more high profile. Still punchable.